A Brief History of the Holy Roman Empire, The First Crusade, Part 5, The Capture of Antioch. Now, after the crusading army separated into two separate groups, you have Tancred and Baldwin, who followed the route through Armenia and Cilicia, where Tancred found many Christians who still lived in the lands. These people willingly opened their gates to him and welcomed them as deliverers. Baldwin, however, followed close behind, and when he arrived at Tauris, he demanded, inasmuch as he outranked Tancred, that Tancred hand over the city to his authority. Tancred reluctantly agreed, and when reinforcements arrived, Baldwin refused them admittance into the city, fearing they might challenge his authority. That night, the reinforcement army camped outside the gates when it was discovered that not all the Turks had fled. Some remained behind and staged a surprise attack on the army at night. The massacre was severe, and even Baldwin's own men despised him for his selfishness. Later, Tancred, who is considered one of the top killing knights of Europe at this time, at the instigation of other knights, reluctantly agreed to attack Baldwin's army in retaliation for Tauris. When the battle was over, the two made amends, but it had become clear that Baldwin had lost the respect of the crusaders and many of his own men. Before the armies reached Antioch, Baldwin had an offer from the Armenian city of Edessa. The city lay east of what the crusaders had planned to take, but the people of the city were desperate to be liberated from the Turks. The Christian prince of the city therefore promised to adopt Baldwin as his son and name him heir if he would come and liberate Edessa. Baldwin agreed and abandoned the crusade. With a few loyal troops, he headed for Edessa, where he established his rule. Not long after taking the city, however, Baldwin was cited in a conspiracy to overthrow his new father. Prince Tharos was butchered by the people, and Baldwin became their prince. Now he had what he wanted, a small kingdom of his own. This tiny state was but a fraction of what he had once hoped for, but it was the best he could do for the crusaders. We're now well aware of his selfish motives, motives that even led to a failed rebellion by the people of Edessa not long afterwards. The rest of the crusaders mobilized on Antioch. The city itself was one of the best fortified in the country. A huge wall with 400 towers surrounded the city. Raymond recommended an immediate attack, but the others suggested they wait for reinforcements and request siege engines from Alexius Comnenus. Scholars have disputed which of these was more sage advice, but what resulted is fact. The armies of the crusaders waited long months and soon ran out of food and provisions. Raids on neighboring lands and purchase of food from local Christian towns also ran dry. Desertions began to arise, including Peter the Hermit, who had joined the regular army after his failure with his peasant army. Tancred heard of the desertion and caught up with Peter, dragged him back before the leaders, and he was then chastised but forgiven. After 5 months, reinforcements finally arrived, and news that the Eastern Emperor Alexius was marching to assist the crusaders lifted spirits for a short while. The Turks, however, were also waiting for reinforcements. The first set of Turkish reinforcements came just after the crusaders. Crusaders managed to beat off the Turkish troops with the loss of many lives, but many months had passed, and as of yet there's no real attempt to take the city. Worse yet, Bohemond, whose character seemed borrowed from his ambitious father, Robert Guiscard, was already stirring up dissension by trying to secure the rule of Antioch for himself. Raymond firmly held that the oath to the Eastern Emperor should be upheld and the city returned to him. It was June 1098. Before Antioch would finally be taken. News reached the crusaders' camp that Kerboga was leading a large Muslim army to support Antioch. More deserters fled the crusaders' encampment when the battle appeared imminent. Bohemond, however, had secretly negotiated a pact with a traitor inside of Antioch. A group of knights slipped into Antioch and opened the gates. The army rushed in and took Antioch only days before Kerboga's army arrived. The victory was nonetheless short-lived, for now the siege army had become the besieged, and Kerboga of Mosul set up in the very camp abandoned by the victorious crusaders. The events that follow would change the long-term impact of the crusades, not in terms of their success, which was all but assured by this time, but in terms of the future of the Latin states of Palestine and Syria. Bishop Lepew, who was actually the papal legate, accompanied Raymond and is often considered to have been the spiritual leader of the Crusades. While the war had always been savage, and particularly in the Middle Ages, the Crusaders did restrain themselves to some extent under his guidance. Chivalry and the cross tempered the brutality of the Normans, but only moderately. With Kerboga standing outside the gates, a new spiritual leader emerged. Peter Bartholomew was a rascally man of disrepute. Claims of repeated visions of St. Andrew. He told the leaders of the crusade that St. Andrew's visions had tormented him for months and had revealed the location of a sacred relic. He declared that the holy lance that pierced Christ's side was buried beneath St. Peter's, the church in Antioch. Bishop Lepew doubted the story, especially since its supposed holy lance was already said to be residing in Constantinople, as were most of the biblical relics. Despite this, the leaders decided to search anyway. St. Peter's had been turned into a stable by the Muslims, and it was not uncommon to hide relics under sacred ground if danger was coming. After much digging, a lance was discovered, and a sign in the sky, supposedly a meteor, heartened the spirits of the people and the army. Raymond led his army out of Antioch with the Holy Lance before him, and this surprise attack caught Kerboga's people off guard. The Muslim army was routed and the Crusaders had secured Antioch. But to point out something here too, of course the lance was found by Peter Bartholomew digging alone in the middle of the night. So it's always had some issues with it. Victory lifted the spirits of all, but was followed by the death of Bishop Lepew a month later. Disease often accompanies war, and the bishop was among the first stricken. Peter Bartholomew, however, despised the bishop, who viewed him as a charlatan, and declared another vision, in which it was revealed that the bishop had descended to hell for a number of days as punishment for his disbelief before ascending to heaven. Immediately, people started disliking the new prophet. Moreover, Bohemond resolved to keep Antioch for himself, and when it was found that the Eastern Emperor's army had turned back and did not come to rescue the Crusaders as promised, Bohemond had justification for renunciation of his oath of loyalty. The other leaders argued with Bohemond, and in the end, to ensure his claim was not taken from him, Bohemond withdrew from the Crusades and called Antioch his home. So we've had five crusading armies, and two men have now created their own little state. But what's going on back in Europe? Let's briefly go back and look what is happening when all these people disappear. Now, the Crusades did not alleviate many of the problems that existed in Europe. Henry IV was still facing a rebellious son, and Urban II was increasingly gaining the respect of the people. In this latter sense, the Crusades were a success. Urban II was now the true pope in the eyes of most of all of Europe. But as long as Clement remained holed up in Castel de San Angelo, he was a threat, and mob violence continued throughout much of the years. Finally, through bribery, the Pierleone family succeeded in ejecting Clement from San Angelo, and the entire city of Rome fell into Urban II's hands in August of 1098. Clement fled to safety and awaited an opportunity to return. For Henry IV, the situation also improved somewhat. His rebellious son did not endear himself to many of the German princes, and in 1098, many of them agreed to accept Henry V as their heir to the imperial throne. Conrad continued as the anti-king, but his weakness made him no severe threat to Henry IV. As Clement's position weakened, Henry attempted to make amends with the papacy and would at one point suggest leaving on a crusade himself in exchange for the lifting of his excommunication. Even though Henry never did go on the crusade, the request would further weaken the position of the Clementine popes and assure the eventual victory of the Gregorian popes. Henry was, in essence, admitting the legitimacy of the Gregorian pope's excommunication. And, of course, Henry IV, kind of the expert on excommunication, being excommunicated on many occasions, at least three. So now we're at the point where we've got one objective left for the Crusades, and that is the capture of Jerusalem. Now, the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987 to 1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.